welcome back for a new episode of Design Cafe, where we like to have candid and deep conversations about UX design. We share about our thoughts and experience working as a designer in the tech industry. In this fourth season, we've decided to challenge ourselves by discussing some difficult taboo topics. So we'll cover things like mental health at work, dealing with toxic workplaces, and the challenges of career progression. Basically, topics that make you a bit uncomfortable to talk about, but are really important as they impact us all. I'm your co-host, Sandrine.
And I'm your co-host, Susan.
We intend to release a new episode every couple of weeks on a Friday. And in the meantime, if you'd like to hear a bit more about us, you can find us on Twitter at Design Cafe or on LinkedIn on Design Cafe. And we also have a website at designcafe.com. And if you'd like to support the podcast a little bit further, you can leave us a review on your podcast platform. And you can also buy us a coffee on buymeacoffee.com/designcafe. So in this week's episode, we're going to be talking about speed and mostly speed at all costs. So there is a bit, not of a trend, but they are obviously a big topic in each company over the speed of delivery and how a team can release work faster. And there's kind of a big question around what is the right pace of delivery, in the sense that obviously you want to release to customers quite often and regularly, but you also want to ensure quality of delivery. And there's a big balance to find between speeds and quality, etc. So we're going to be diving into this topic. When we talk about speed of delivery, I guess what comes to mind to you, and for you, how would you consider, what do you consider to be a good speed of delivery?
I realize this is a very difficult topic, especially as we're recording this in July, and July is a very slow month. maybe it's a good thing that we're trying to talk about this, just for the contrast. I'll answer it bluntly, or not bluntly, but when you ask what comes to mind when I think of speed of delivery, I immediately think of development speed and all the associated baggage that comes with trying to get product design to fit into a product development life cycle. I mean, for the last many years, really, we've had this sort of tension, I suppose, in our industry and in our craft as designers, where design has sort of been shoehorned a little bit into agile development practices. And don't get me wrong, I love working lean, I love collaboration, I love working at a good pace. That's not the same as working quickly, at a sustainable pace, and working closely with developers and all of that. So I'm not, you know, anti-agile, but I do think that when we talk about speed of delivery, it's, how can I put this? It's a little bit engineering biased. It revolves around development and engineering life cycles of things. And I don't think too much, or a lot of thought, but I don't think enough thought has been put into how design fits into that. And that's how we end up often feeling like, us designers, we're having to kind of keep up the same speed as development. We feel this pressure sometimes. I certainly do, that I shouldn't be a bottleneck for developers. Designers shouldn't, you know, the designers need to feed enough work for developers to do. We need to release features quickly. And so, yeah, I don't think we've nailed it, basically, is the short answer to everything I've said. I don't think there's a clear, obvious, ideal speed or way for design and development and product as a whole to deliver at a specific speed.
Yeah, I actually think of the same things. When you were describing how it makes you think of a very engineering-led process, And it made me think immediately of like, it's kind of work or feeding the machine. It's like, yeah, kind of, as you said, catching up, making sure that you're working towards feeding the machine as opposed to actually delivering value sometimes, because there's that speed and that cadence that means that as a designer, you have to retrofit your process to meet the demands of the engineering team or the product team, to go on development, basically. And I think sometimes it's quite tricky to arrange your design process sometimes around now, because obviously sometimes, as we know, sometimes it's super clear where you're going to go with the problem space and what solution you're going to come out with, and sometimes it's a lot less clear and it's a lot more ambiguous. And you might decide actually not to solve that problem, or you might decide to go back to discovery and so forth. And obviously with that, you take the risk of the whole machine falling apart, I would say. So yeah, I guess I was wondering why and where do you think that whole need for speed of delivery comes from? Like, why do we have this sort of cadence that is being put upon the teams?
From my experience, it often comes as this pressure from quote unquote the business, which is a bit strange to say because we're all the business. But I guess I'm thinking about leadership or management, who in turn they have their own pressures from, for example, the C-suite or the board or investors to hit certain targets. Could be also pressures from, I don't know, a sales function to hit certain targets. We might have big enterprise customers if you work in enterprise SaaS, and you know that there are external or top level pressures that cascade down through middle management and then down to the development teams, and then that cascades sort of horizontally to us as designers as well. There could be other pressures, but that's a sort of common one, I feel. For example, you know, someone somewhere commits to delivering a roadmap that looks a certain way, or if you're a very sales-driven organization, again, you might have promised things to very important customers. And so it's hard because on the one hand, I see as a business, you need to progress. I almost said grow, but it's commonly there are lots of businesses that need to grow, but growth isn't always the correct thing. But you want to get somewhere and move somewhere. And then I think that whole drive to progress and move forward is often conflated with the need to ship things quickly. It's almost a bit like as long as we keep shipping, just keep shipping. we're going forward, and we're moving in the right direction, and we're making progress, and we're improving the product. But there are so many assumptions in there, like, just, you know, of course the obvious ones is the more features you add, there are more features to maintain, right? Like the design system becomes more complex, the tech stack becomes more complex, there's more tech debt, there's more design debt. More features very often leads to a worse user experience, you know? So yeah, I think there's a bit of a conflation, if that's the right word, between thinking that is if you just churn out more and more stuff, you're moving forward, but you don't really think about how it affects quality, how it affects the additional burden on maintenance, debt, and that sort of thing.
I agree, and I think there's a bit of a FOMO as well sometimes, of like, I guess that fear of being disrupted or not being innovative enough or not staying on track.
Competitive.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's also a big fear of that, which is fair, you know. But I think sometimes it distracts the team away from focusing on the core value proposition of the product, going back to core user needs and just solely focusing on addressing those. And I think sometimes you can really spiral and be afraid of what's going on externally so much that you're more focused on what's happening outside as opposed to what you should be focusing inside, if that makes sense. And I think, yeah, sometimes we're very, very keen on catching up with competition or the markets at like in a really fast manner. But I think sometimes it's not always the right path to take. It's not because your competitors go one way that they have actually made the right choice. Sometimes they will have, but not always. And sometimes something makes sense for their brand, it doesn't make sense for yours. So yeah, I think there's also a whole thing around this. But I was actually wondering, for me, there's also that big belief, I think, in our industry that obviously the faster you release, the faster you learn and the faster you fail and so forth. And that a lot of it comes from, you know, Lean UX and all of this. And I was wondering what were your thoughts on this as well. Like, sometimes I feel like we are very fast to deliver to learn, but we don't actually really know what we're trying to learn. And I think in this whole sense, it's not so much a learning experience because you don't even really know what you've learned once your tests have failed, for example. So even though you've been fast and quick to fail, sometimes you can't quite make sense of the learnings and whether you even went in the right direction. Sometimes the solution might fail just because the solution wasn't thought through enough. The problem still is worth addressing. But if you get the wrong learnings and you don't know why and where they came from, then you might actually make the wrong decision of discarding a problem and move on to something else, for example. So I think there's something to be really cautious with here. So yeah, I was wondering what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, many, many thoughts on this. I mean, first of all, my preference is to work in quite a, again, lean, agile way. So I'm not, you know, I'm not anti working in a lean way. I say a lean way, not, you know, the lean way or the agile way. I don't really believe in these, you know, textbook ways of doing things. So I'm a huge proponent of getting things out there relatively quickly so that we can learn and sense and respond and all of that. I don't think it's binary. I don't think it's either or. The problem I have with a lot of this is when companies and teams don't approach this lean and agile learning process or approach with focus and clarity and strategy and principles. and with that, like a lot of the examples that come to mind is teams and companies that, you know, read the Lean Startup, which I can't remember what I gave it on Goodreads, like two out of five, three out of five. Like it's apparently the Bible, but I don't really subscribe to it. I hope I don't offend anyone. Or yeah, we can, like, I'm sure someone will say I misunderstood it. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. My point is I see teams and organizations that sort of follow the Lean Startup approach almost too literally, and they just A/B test their way into what they hope is a successful outcome. So they kind of just, oh, let's just throw stuff out there and A/B test it and see what makes a significant difference, or let's run a bunch of experiments. And there's no sort of like foundational value system and strategy to it. Just because you can A/B test something or just because you can experiment with something doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. And with every quote-unquote quick test you do, every scrappy experiment you do spend resources, you do spend time, you do spend people's energy. And I don't often enough see how people are mindful of that expenditure and think deeply about, like, where should we spend our energy? Just because we can move quickly doesn't mean it's a good idea. And just because, you know, we can run 10 A/B tests in a week, I don't know if anyone does that, but, you know, it's think, oh, then we'll learn 10 times as fast as if we do one. It doesn't mean the quality of your learning is high or that you're moving in the right direction. If anything, it can send you off in the wrong direction if you don't know what an A/B test is actually good for and if you're even doing it correctly. So I have issues with that approach. And I think sometimes it's also a bit of this is a bit of a side point, but the whole speed thing also tends to, for me, favor a quant approach to things, where you're kind of, you're moving at pace, or you're moving very quickly, and you're experimenting very, very quickly to move certain metrics, like quant metrics. And maybe there's some qualitative thinking in their research, but it's not given the same level of attention, because qualitative stuff is just, I don't know, it's treated as more fuzzy, and you can't, it's not as tangible, and you can't, you know, point at a piece of qual data to the same extent and say we moved a needle so and so much. So but I think that the qualitative piece is also important to think about, you know, for example, who are the people we're focusing on targeting, and what are their lives, and what are the mental models, and all that quote unquote fluffy stuff that you can't A/B test your way to the kind of foundational, I use foundational a lot, but like the foundational stuff of what you're trying to achieve, I guess the value proposition, like you said, you know, what are we trying to do here? Why do we exist as a company? Why are we even here? All that philosophical stuff. Yeah, hope I'm making sense.
No, you are. And I think, interestingly, I kind of see a commonality into what you're saying between when speed intensifies, and also there's like kind of a focus towards, I guess, lean, but lean in a kind of a bad way, I would say, and A/B testing your way somewhere. There's kind of like it's almost like teams are losing sight of the why, and they're really focusing on the what and the when and the now.
Exactly.
And they're really losing sight of the why. And it's interesting because the more, when I've worked in places where speed was incredibly valued, the more we were going down that path, and the more in design critiques I was seeing my colleagues and even myself sometimes struggling to explain why we were designing something, why it was prioritized, why we were testing this, why we were doing this, how does it come back to the strategy, how does it come back to the mission, how does it come back together to create a consistent experience with the rest of the flows. And I think that's pretty telling, I think, actually, is that, yeah, because you're so focused on the next thing that you just don't even have perspective anymore over, are you even going in the right direction? And yeah, but then also, if I flip the coin, you also can't be in a state of paralysis and spend so much indulging in details that you don't even launch and go to your customers and test things, you know, in the product. Because I think sometimes a lot of designers try to test things through usability testing, but they try to test things that are not usability related, and they try to test the value prop through usability testing, for example. And it's like, you can only know if you've delivered value once it's live and people use it when they're actually in the environment using your product. That's the only way you will know if you've solved the problem. So I think there's also like there's a balance to find there, right? It's like, yeah. But then there's some companies out there like Apple, and I think Airbnb swapped to this model as well recently, where they release, I don't know, quarterly or every semester or something like this. And as we know, they're incredibly successful.
Yeah, I'm quite curious about that. I don't know much about the Airbnb approach. I know of the Apple approach. I've always assumed it was also a bit hardware related, or, you know, also they have their kind of annual conferences and that sort of thing. I don't have an iPhone, so I'm not that deep into it. But in general, with Airbnb and Apple and maybe other companies, how does it work for them? What do you tell me what you know, Sandrine?
I mean, I know only what's being said online. So I just watched the talk for Brian Chesky, the CEO of Airbnb recently. And yeah, I think they just wanted to give the team time to, I think, focus on restructuring the flows of each experience. And yeah, and I guess they make it a thing where they basically release, I think it's, they had a summer release and a winter release, I think. And I guess they make it a point that when they actually go and release a bunch of features, they actually know that this is actually going to improve the user experience of Airbnb. And they also do a huge promotion of each new feature or what has been changed. Because you made a good point, like sometimes you test things, but you don't tell people particularly about it. And it's true, if you don't really promote and market whatever changes you made to your product, sometimes it's actually kind of, it's going to be hard to get learnings because people don't, they're not necessarily aware of it. I'm also obviously a big advocate to only make your users discover features when they need it. But sometimes there are also a scenario where sometimes if they just don't know it exists, they're not also going to be incentivized to look for it. So yeah. But yeah, I think that's how they work, basically. To be honest, I don't really know exactly fully the reasons why they moved to that process. But I think the CEO just wanted to be more design driven and put design back at the core and I guess just give teams time. The reasons why they do a release every couple of years, then I'm not exactly sure all the details of it. But I think it's along the lines of Apple, which is just a very interesting model. And I think what is interesting with them is that obviously it works very well for those two companies. I'm not sure a startup could try this and be successful. But it also shows that you can take a different approach, and the approach more of taking your time to release things and still actually have an impact and be successful, which is quite refreshing because the other philosophy in tech is really just launch, and learn whenever you can and just, you know, be scrappy and learn and then figuring out later. And it's, as you said, often we come back with products that look like monsters because everyone adds so fast to the product, and they add and then they remove and they add more, and sometimes some things stick that shouldn't stick or they should have been iterated on, but we've already moved on to the next thing. And yeah, so
yeah, I also think there's no one size fits all to this. It depends not just on the size of the company, like you alluded to, like, you know, a startup works a bit differently from a very big established company with lots of mature products and with lots of users, but I think it also depends on what industry you're in. I have a feeling, I should know this because I feel like I've come across this again, this is July brain talking. For example, if you work in healthcare or in a healthcare product or financial services, there you have to be, you can't just ship things super quickly like you can with other products where, you know, medicine or someone's money depends on it. So like there are certain industries where you also deliberately have to be careful. You can't just like A/B test yourself into things all the time. So it depends on lots of things and probably things I haven't mentioned as well. So it'll be different for different companies. And I think it'll also be different for what you say about how, for example, Airbnb and Apple, for that matter, they are more design driven.
They are, absolutely.
So it also depends on, you know, the structure and the makeup of your company, and almost at a high level, what the principles are. Is it to be design-led, for example, then you put care and craft into that. But yeah, I wanted to just point back to what you said about the paralysis part as well. I don't think being design-led, and not that you said this, but I think it's important to point out that being design-led doesn't mean being stuck in user research or usability testing absolutely everything before you ship as well. That's not what we mean. It's a bit more holistic than that to be design-led, to think about quality, to think about design strategy. Design is, yeah, again, a strategy and not just a tactical way of funneling work into engineering. It's way more than just a process. Design is not just, you know, again, just usability test things every time before you ship, that sort of thing. So being design driven tends to be a bit slower than that kind of fast, super iterative development cycle, but not for reasons of just doing usability testing all the time. It's because you do take that time to craft, think strategically, think holistically, and yeah, all that stuff. If you're a designer, in a team or in an organization and you feel squeezed. I think a lot of us have felt squeezed and a bit overworked, and, you know, in the situation where everyone wants everything from you, that product manager or that engineer, or, you know, they're just waiting for designs. How do you cope, or how do you push back, or what do you do in those situations?
It's a good question, and it's a tricky one, I think. I haven't fully cracked that one myself. It also really depends on the mindset of your teammates as well, how collaborative your team is, and so forth. But I think often it's just back to help people kind of go back to the why and try to make people pause and reflect on why we're doing things and what are we trying to learn from this. And, you know, if you see that a solution that is really suboptimal is about to be prioritized, or, I don't know, kind of just help people as well reflect on whether this thing even has a chance to be successful in a test. Like, I've seen sometimes some things being tested that the designer was not even really confident that the test would be successful, because they knew that the solution was subpar. And that's not good when you go into a test and you already kind of feel like the thing is going to fail because, you know, the thing has not been scoped well, or it has not been thought through enough. It's not connected well enough to the rest of the experience. There's plenty of reasons sometimes why where this might happen. So yeah, kind of just go back and contest that a little bit and be like, well, yeah, just basically pause and be like, this, it's a waste of time to test things that we don't think are going to be successful, basically. And if we already know, or at least have a good feeling that that thing is not going to succeed, then maybe we should go back and launch something we're more confident in, basically. I think what I struggle with is when there's pressure to constantly feed the machine, as we said. So it's like, yeah, like we need something for the engineers next cycle and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, this can be a never ending thing. Like, because yes, indeed, you have a bunch of engineers. So obviously engineers are costly. So you don't want to waste their time. You want to utilize their skills and you want to build things, which is completely understandable from a business perspective. The thing is, often, just like we have design debt, there's a ton of tech debt as well that tends to slow down speed of delivery for future features, and also that just, you know, drag performance down of products. So often, you know, if your team hasn't actually highlighted some technical debt to tackle, that's also sometimes a good pointer to, a good thing to discuss as well as a team, of being like, well, can we actually pause the new feature development or you know, test for, I don't know, a period of time where we focus on tech debts. And that also gives us time to go back and discover a particular problem space and come back with a stronger solution, because right now we're not confident. I think it's just going back and discuss the level of confidence you have in the initiatives and the bets, or whatever you call them, that you're going to put out there. It's, if you're not confident that going to have a chance to succeed, then don't do them, and go back and reflect on why, and come back when you're at least know that whatever you're going to test, you're going to get good learnings for it. So yeah, but then again, it's back to how collaborative your team is, how collaborative your product department is. That's not always a given, and if there's no collaboration and communication, then it's a lot harder. So yeah, I don't know. What about you, Susan?
Yeah, completely agree with what you said. It's question why are we doing, not question why are we doing things, but go back to why are we doing things, to question why should we do this one thing that we're being asked to do. A separate pattern I see, which is unrelated to that, but also is related to designers being squeezed and pressured to ship or deliver very quickly, is a structural problem, which I think is very common, where there are way more engineers or developers than there are designers. And and designer, like, I don't know, I've seen and experienced myself, like, one designer to 10 engineers, and that designer just feels very, very stretched and has to gets the perception that they're having to design and deliver and feed the machine very, very quickly, whereas maybe for the engineers it is very, very slow, like, oh, we're just sitting here. So speed for one discipline might not be speed for the other discipline. And with that, I think it's more of a structural problem where whoever's deciding how hiring and departmental structures work don't quite understand that they need to hire more designers, basically, or that the ratio's off. So I think that's almost like a, yeah, where speed for one thing or one discipline, like design, doesn't mean necessarily speed for engineers as well. And it's neither of those disciplines' fault. It's a structural problem.
Yeah, I agree. And I think sometimes as well, like, we complain that the design process is slow, but then yet we don't facilitate the design team with the research team, with copywriting. You know, like, there are things that can help accelerate the design process. Like, if you don't have researchers and designers have to honestly fight to just get research done and have to lead it themselves, well, you're basically adding at least a few weeks to your design process each time. Whereas if you have a strong research department, then maybe you can actually foresee research needs ahead of time and the researchers can support and be embedded in teams or whatever, but at least make sure the insights are there when they need to be there. And so decisions can keep being made, because I think that's the problem, is sometimes there's a lack of qualitative insights. And as you said, that's when then maybe we go back and rely too much on the quant. But as we know, the quant doesn't, it never tells you why things happen in a particular way. So yeah, when there's that lack of qualitative, that's when you start seeing a lot of decisions being made that are getting more and more distanced from that why. So yeah, just making sure that there's a good influx of qualitative insights to support teams for their decision making, so they can balance it out with everything else they know and that they've been testing. I think that will help accelerating.
Mm. And to add to that, and this is something I'm really passionate about, and I think it plays into this speed issue as well, is how I think it's a bit of a problem that designers are often having to balance and be stretched across the discovery area, the problem space, as well as the delivery area, so the kind of opportunities and also going into development. Whereas development, I feel like I'm throwing engineers under the bus, which is totally not what I'm trying to do. I love engineers. My partner's an engineer. But engineers or developers, they're often just in the development land. They're like, they get to focus on development and just stay there. And I feel like all of this gets balanced to a better extent if developers are being brought into the discovery area as well. And I've seen that happen really, really well, where maybe development slows down a bit so that everyone in the whole cross-functional team, engineers as well, can also be brought into discovery. It could be as simple as observing user research or usability tests, but it could also be assisting with prototypes that go into discovery. Or it could be, just building things that aren't meant for production but are meant mm-hmm. for discovery. Or just like fat marker sketching, like pick up a Sharpie and talk things through. you don't have to produce high fidelity mock-ups to developers, hopefully, every single time. You can just talk things through, and paradoxically that speeds things up. what often slows things down is when I have, as a designer, have to kind of laboriously spend time designing something carefully and hand that over to an engineer, when, you know, it'd be much quicker to just scribble something together on the whiteboard or on the Miro thing. So yeah, I think there's the pressure we feel as designers to move very quickly, and that we don't get time to think things through, is often because we are both in discovery and delivery. Whereas, you know, the people at the end of the delivery, they're just waiting for things they can deliver, if that makes sense. So yeah, bringing everyone earlier in the process will help as well.
Yeah, I agree, it's true. And often we are also juggling several projects at once as well. I mean, for me, it's quite rare that I fully focus on one initiative. Often there will be a couple, maybe more sometimes. And yeah, they're not all in the same stage of the design process. So yeah, sometimes it can be a bit tricky. But I agree, like, I think, and that's when you also elevate the team, right? If you involve everyone in the discovery or problem definition, brainstorming and all of this, then you just work as a team, and it's not just the designer supporting the design effort, it's the whole team making decisions. Obviously, you know, the designer will bring their expertise from a design perspective, but they can also bring in the team, and as you said, it's bringing back people to come and go, fuel interesting conversations about where can we deliver value to customers and to our users, and, you know, yeah, have more meaningful conversations over what's being delivered and why. And then the whole team is conscious as to why they're working on things. And I think engineers, at least in good places and good engineers, they want that, they seek that, and they actually get really annoyed when they don't have that aspect in their job.
I completely agree. And I'm puzzled by this because, of course, in the smaller places I've been, the startups, I see more often than not that it works really well that engineers are working at earlier in the process. So they're participating in discovery and they're super collaborative and they're not just sitting there waiting to be handed polished designs. And they're interested and they're super user focused, although maybe it's a bit of a, what's it called, red herring, like that engineers who are interested in discovery and design tend to be drawn towards startups. I don't know. But in bigger companies, I more commonly see this kind of, yeah, one designer trying to feed the machine of a bigger engineering team and the engineers aren't that involved in discovery. I often see that when I sort of try to go to an engineer and be like, hey, do you want to help out on this? Do you want to help out with this prototype, or do you want to like watch this usability testing session or something? They're super keen. Not everyone, of course. It depends on the person, and we shouldn't force everyone to work a certain way. But so I just wonder what if it's not the individual engineers that are opposed to participating more in the design process, then where does this separation come from? Where, you know, you get almost the design is almost like a overstretched, stressed out bottleneck. I wonder if it's maybe sometimes just whoever's top down designing the structures, designing the workflows.
I'm not sure as well. I think inherently for me it comes from that pressure to deliver. That is, yeah, I would say often it comes top down. Which then ultimately then when you start putting more pressure to deliver, then people are focusing on what's blocking them from delivering. And then that puts the focus on delivering quantity as opposed to thinking about what is the thing we should be working on right now? What is the thing we should be building right now? But then I think it's not that obviously I want to make, you know, leadership look like evil here, because I also understand what leadership is trying to do in the sense that they're trying to make sure we deliver value to customers regularly, because it's true that sometimes you can get into that state of paralysis, as I was saying before, where you release things every 3 to 6 months, sometimes because you have incredible technical debt on your products, sometimes it's because there's no product direction, sometimes because there's no, I don't know, enough resourcing, because yeah, design is taking a long time to research. Who knows? There's tons of reasons why that paralysis happens. And I'm not sure it's the right way to solve it. I think sometimes what product tries to do is to incredibly restrict the scope of what is being released so that basically you can start releasing early. And I think that's a good idea in theory, as long as you have the space to still think about what you're going to release. No matter how small that thing is, it should still be released with a purpose and a good reason to get learnings. And then also give the space to the team to come back to it and iterate. Because I think there's been a huge breach of trust between design and product as well, is that when you design at speed, often what I've seen in my experience is that you don't get the chance to iterate. And I don't know for you, but I've had many colleagues complain about this in their teams as well, that they launch something, they get learnings, somehow it's considered good enough, even though it's frankly not good enough, and we don't go back to iterate, and what we end up with is cluttering the product with, frankly, often not great, only half-built features, like features that have only tapped in not even half of their potential. Sometimes it can be rushed work because it's been rushed. And yeah, there's also, I think, sometimes that breach of trust of like basically promising the team they will reiterate and they don't. And that's because there's a pressure to continue to deliver at speed and work on the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And it can become a very bad cycle. And I think that's what we need to be like mindful of. So yes, for working on small scopes, as long as you really like build on top of what you've built previously, and it's in a mindful manner, basically.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've seen this so many times, and it is a breach of trust, as you say. It's sort of like, as a designer, you're kind of like, okay, well, I'll get this rough iteration out quickly because I've been promised that, you know, we're going to improve it later. And I understand as a designer that, you know, I can't perfect this feature right now because that will take time. But yeah, when you don't get to iterate, then it's frustrating. I don't know what else to say. It's really frustrating, and you build up frustration as well and tension. So it is really difficult.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not just design debt that accumulates, it's also technical debt. Sometimes engineers will cut corners, or they will build things in a way that it's okay for the test, or it's okay for a first iteration, but it should never be the permanent state of that feature, for example. And then you move on, you forget about it, and then by the time it just accumulates. But I don't know really where it comes from. I think maybe there's also a lack of, as you said, you know, before you talked about lack of focus, and maybe there's also that, like, do we pile on too much on teams, too many objectives?
I think so. I was going to say, I think the culprit I often see is shifting priorities. So yeah, I don't think the whole breaching trust thing is deliberate. I don't think product people, for example, are being deliberately malicious when they say, yeah, we're going to have time to iterate on this and then not. I think often product people, product managers, sorry, we're also product people, or whoever, are squeezed as well and get shifting priorities from, again, quote unquote, the business, the metrics we need to move one quarter changes to the next, and suddenly we need to, you know, do a whiplash and look at something else. That often is the problem as well. And of course, it is hard to plan product work and design work months in advance. It is hard to go, okay, well, this month we're delivering this iteration, and then next month we're going to deliver the next iteration, because there's so many things out of our control. The market might change, or a competitor might come up and do something that disrupts, or money might run out if you're a startup, or, you know, there's so many things that are hard to control. So yeah, all this to say, this is really hard work. It's really hard work to balance speed and quality. And I think it's almost the thing you need to, as a designer, what can we do? It's like you have to, I don't think it's an individual designer thing. I think as a design discipline in your org, you need to, not necessarily, I'm not like, either or about this, not have a set of principles per se, but you need to know what kind of design discipline you are in that organization, in that team, what your values and, yes, principles, whether they're formal, informal, and kind of try your best to stick to those. So for example, like accessibility, again, that's a big one for me, right? So if I'm in a place where I feel like we're shipping so quickly and accessibility is lagging behind, that doesn't sit right with me as a designer. So what are those kind of pillars you feel like you need to prioritize when you're trying to balance speed and quality? Because quality isn't, it's not speed or quality. It's sort of like, which bits of quality do we prioritize exactly, while balancing yeah. speed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's like your guiding principles of like, what is fit enough for development as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you can't do everything. It's not going to be perfect. So what are the kind of, not tick boxes, but you know, yeah, again, those must-haves that signify good enough quality for us as designers while still delivering.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and again, like beyond the choices that the team makes, I think the business as well can support teams to work faster by giving the right processes and the right tools. And like, for example, I keep seeing design system as being something that is constantly underinvested in. And it's one of the main things you can invest in to accelerate design and accelerate development time. And it's a headache to figure out at the beginning. Honestly, when you're starting with it, it feels like a mountain, like an Everest. And it's painful to work on it, but it's so essential. And once you've started at least providing those kind of tools to your team, like, yeah, you will see like a bunch of acceleration thanks to it. And it's quite frustrating that we're still not, yeah, just not prioritizing those things.
Yeah, totally agree. There are some sort of like foundational things that are almost like the foundational building blocks for a design discipline to stand on. Like we need legs. We need those legs to stand on so that we can deliver at a reasonable pace and still maintain quality design, having some sort of design system, however mature or immature is one of them. Having access to users is another one. Like, you know, I've so many times I've seen companies that are trying to move super, super quickly and keep failing with features they ship because design or the product team doesn't have access to users and they're just guessing or A-B testing their way into things again. So completely agree. Like you need to provide those legs for us to stand on, or at least give us time to build those legs. Stretching that metaphor out, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, if you don't want to give the time to your team to make all those decisions on their own, then you need to bring what they need to make decisions fast to them. That's pretty much, yeah.
And sorry, I just thought of one thing. the other thing is a level of autonomy and empowerment as well, just because you said, you know, giving people the ability to make decisions. It's this weird paradox I often see where teams are pressured to deliver at speed because and they don't have the autonomy to decide. It comes from somewhere else. But then also because the team doesn't have autonomy and isn't empowered, they're spending more time getting permission to things, for example, or getting reviews or whatever, checking that the metrics are correct, checking that the OKRs are correct. So it's this weird paradox where you're pressured to deliver quickly, but you don't spend more time getting permission to do things as well, or asking for resources. I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah, it's if you give a team more autonomy and empowerment, they can move at the pace and deliver at the speed that feels right for them because they're making those decisions themselves as well. Anyway, I just keep thinking about all those times where you know, we need to deliver this quickly, but that person needs to review the design and that person needs to check it and that person needs to do QA. And I'm just like, these people aren't even in the team. this is just slowing us down. So yeah, that's also frustrating.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, any kind of sign-off process can be very frustrating because sometimes you need to move fast. It happened to me that we needed to move fast on something and something got through without sign-off that normally was supposed to do. And then the team got asked to undo all of it because then we got forced to go back to that sign-off thing. So then it was such nonsense. And yeah, that's, as you said, that's when the team feels like they have no autonomy and And it also impacts their confidence in making decisions. And you want your teams to feel confident to make decisions. Obviously, there's decisions they can't make on their own, absolutely, but there are some they should be able to make. And it's for the business to figure out which one are those. And yeah, I don't know. Okay, so I think we had a good cover of the topic of delivery speed and delivering fast at all costs. We will be back in a couple of weeks again for new episodes. If you want to hear more about us, you can find us on LinkedIn at Design Cafe or on Twitter at Design Cafe as well. We used to have a website, but we are currently looking at moving it to a different platform. So find us on LinkedIn or Twitter at the moment.